I was going to bother with that person for 3 months without interruption was because it was a Vipassana student and knew, but it was something through an extreme and overdoses of that kind of drug, I think, whatever, I never found out, a kind of split. You know, the mental faculties got out of order, and there was no faculty there of concentration. Couldn't. So what we did was, put her in water, hot water. Can you feel it? Yes, I can. Feel it. Feel it. Feel it. Hold your hands here. Feel it. Feel it. Feel it. Again, couldn't feel otherwise. Burning hot water. That I couldn't go in, but she could. That was feeling then. It got stimulated. Then really hard, extreme, some yoga exercises like tensing and letting go. So that the feeling was strong and the mind, who was very flitty, flipped out, could notice the feeling. And gradually, by doing it again and again and again and again and again, the mind began to connect, yeah, to see, to stay in kind of attention. And that gives then the other faculties time to also to live. A little interest came, and not so gloomy anymore, and a little listening, and the will to move came, and to do things came. You see, all the other faculties started moving also, because there was a little order. Then I let it go to the staircase, always walking up staircase to the cathedral, high up, 360 steps, three times a day, up and down, because by the 100th step, I have to do this, so hurting me. Yes, feel hurting. Wonderful, we're doing things, you see. Three times. Morning, breakfast instead of breakfast. Instead of lunch, instead of dinner. Well, we got dinner too. Anyway, the mind got pulled into it. The mind attended. It wasn't anymore hooked. It got loosened. I am schizophrenic. Which was an acute state of fear. I am fearful. I can't do it. They're all after me. I can't, my mind is gone. All these identifications. It was real. But how to lure it out? I can give drugs, but that is a temporary momentary quieting. I don't know how much it probably does help by if the right environment is there. Anyway, this was this case, and gradually, as I said, I dared it, because as soon as the mind became a little bit more concentrated, it began to remember what to do from previous Vipassana practice, and it began to remember, and it began to work more and more by itself, practicing, calming the mind, not identifying with the arising images, which are hooked into I, you see. That doesn't mean now I can't see anymore, I feel sad. You can, if you want to really say that you are very aware, you can say, my five skandhas are set now, or my mind broad body process is in uproar. You see, we cannot speak that way. But it would be actually not bad. It does suggest something else than when you say I, you see. But you can use I, it's kind of nice. It's nice, I is me, sure. But you see, let this I live without the deeper understanding of its nature, you are out for suffering. That is the first noble truth. It's only because of living attached to an I. That doesn't mean now, you know, the one who is enlightened and has no eye, he doesn't die. He also goes through these pains, to these basic pains of suffering. But you know, that kind of suffering he goes through, it's different. He ages in a different way. His attitude is different. He faces death when that gives up this body differently. The attitude has just changed, and that isn't a mental stuff only. That's a total transformation. So the one who has a sickness and suffers from pain, and who has the right attitude and understanding of the process, can take it with an open mind, the observing mind. The pain is there, but it's a different effect. You may even notice wide in your heart you can at that moment even see all pains of all beings. Not the only one who suffers. In this state of our development, we can help ourselves when extreme pain comes too. And said, well, this moment in this world, innumerable beings are sad and suffer. And then seeing your own suffering, your own sadness or depression, you may just feel that you are participating in the deep pain of depression of all beings. So you are in it, like all, but it passes. You just let it be in the state in the light of your attention, of your acknowledgement. Don't act upon it right away. Don't think this, I am only me, my problems. Problems are universal. The more you attach it to the I, the stronger the problem is. Which really isn't. The minute you see it on a more basic, more wisdom level, it doesn't have that fire. Then you do the right thing. You relate rightly to the world. Then you just don't need then now to beam and make funny face and happy face. Because you was, when you recognize your sadness, you shouldn't swing to the other, but just live it in awareness. That change, yeah.
Rajneesh has funny ways to put things sometimes.
Yeah, he does. he really does.
He said one time. He said like this. He said, when you feel sad, be sad. But don't be sad about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like having a problem about the problem.
Yeah, right.
See? Yeah. It's quite well, that is intensifying. You see?
It helped me a lot sometimes.
Yeah.
Because then it changes. Yeah,
yeah.
When you don't.
Yeah. And you see, to be sad is nothing bad, really. But it is bad in that when I identify with it, that my actions and my words and my speech and all my relationship at that moment is influenced by that. And it comes out the wrong way. Why? Because it is from an ego-centeredness, that moment. Not from the right openness, not right understanding. Yeah, well, friends. Seems to be a late night today. Oh.
Night is fun.
Probably is. What? Is that true, 10:15?
Yes, it's just for one night.
Yeah, just one night. Very good, yeah. Let's live it up. Yes. And the last. I wanted to have an evening for opening for question or exchanging things. And maybe this was the evening for that. Speaking about the Four Noble Truths gave us a lot of stimulation for that. And I think, you know, we should not over or underestimate the value of words and thoughts and communication. Because also we are saying we have these thoughts and we talk too much and all. You see, in the light, that the more we attend to that, the more we become also kind of aware what are the how much we think and what we think, and may realize also that thoughts are something very beautiful for communication, for thinking about it. But what we are here mostly talking is in mind training about the excess of all that. You're not thinking the word, the thoughts. The thoughts are think you, actually. So overwhelmed we are. We cannot free ourselves a minute from that. And most of that state, emotional state, which we experience, is influenced by thoughts too. Emotion is just, we say, is feeling, but no. It's mental feeling too, and that is fortified and strengthened by thought. So because of that, we can change. I feel angry, bitter, because I was thinking a lot in terms of words and figuring out how I'm going to wring his neck. Because he was so nasty to me and all this, and you are going on and you really find yourself in a real outrageous state. Well, what brought you into that? The words, the thoughts. Well, that same vehicle can take you out. Now you turn it around. You see that he might not even hear it, might have a very nice time somewhere, you know, on a paddle boat or so, on a river. Never reaches your anger. Well, what you did was contaminating your room. So you realize that and say, my God, yes, I'm angry. It's true, it was bad, terrible. But you know, the minute I realize, I can also think he didn't know better. Poor thing had to be so nasty to me. Poor thing had to be so angry with me. Well, may he be realizing that. May he be awakening to that. May he come to harmony. You see, thoughts of different type. Before you know, may all beings come to harmony. And there you are empty. You see somebody now. Now you. You are plenty. The water is gone, the stale water. You are present now. You see? This is one way of helping yourself. It's better than a pill, I tell you that, or a glass of beer at that kind of thing. Ah. So yes, Karina.
I was just thinking about what you think about using like positive affirmations and writing down all your what you think about yourself, negative thing, and then you put it on the positive. And still, you identify it still with the I, but it can
doesn't matter.
It can
it's good.
Reach over to the next step.
Well,
right.
You know, you can use the I even if you identify it, not identified with it. That is something similar of. Peace.
Yeah, I know persons have used it, and that has really helped.
Yes, I did the two.
And also meditation.
Yeah.
Like
you see, I think what is most in us lacking is this will to really make an effort out of ourselves. I remember when I was very sad, not sad, but really feeling, I never felt bored, I don't know boredom, but sad because some things, really sad, couldn't kind of get out, but I knew I was sad, and so couldn't continue. Well, what I did, and also knew, my helpless, yes, I couldn't change outside the situations, you see. It was so bad, and my relationship to that situation, and it felt so sad and so depressing, and I couldn't get out and do. So what I did in that time to help to get over that was I sat down, I made myself a schedule, and I was traveling at that time, schedule. And in the morning, get up early, make yoga. I don't want, God, have terrible again. God, isn't that, why should I do that? Isn't awful. Anyway, don't you talk to me like this. I'm going to make yoga. You see? I know it's good. Awful. I really don't want it. No, you are going to do it. You see? Again.
Yeah.
Then, next, I was copying a text. Good text, scriptures text, with nice writing, and doing some painting, little flowers around, copying, really. Then couldn't even sit at that time, sitting impossible, quiet. So then, something to do. Then I went, you know, in India, it's a wonderful ground. Go around the corner there, play children, you help to play with children, helps you to move out, to find somebody. Couldn't find children, I went to the elephant in the temple, brought him 12 bananas and fed him. But it took long time. I didn't give him the 12 altogether, he would just grab him. So I fed him piece by piece, maybe 12 pieces in one banana, 144 pieces. I fed piece by piece, mindfully, just to get out, to do something, to get out of that. But that is effort, you see. What am I doing here feeding this him? But unfortunately, I didn't say that because I like elephants. Okay. You observe animals, you see. You do things like that. Go and, oh, you don't have an elephant here, go and look at a bird. How they fight with each other when they pick on a flower or on a fruit. And how they talk to each other. How it chirps, or look down to a fly, just a fly. Have you ever looked at it? Just for how fly. We're very sad how to fly. Look at it. Has nice eyes on the side of this kind of little head. Has 6 legs and 2 when it sits are always in the air back like this. With 4 it jumps and then it stands up, raises up and waves at you. You must understand the language. You have to smile. Let a mosquito bite you and look at him, how he sucks full his body and it becomes all blown up like a balloon and all red. And then you say, I have fed a mosquito, I have shared my blood. Sweetheart, go, be happy, have a full belly, good breakfast. May all mosquitoes have full bellies. Have you ever done that? Have you ever looked at a mosquito or did you just this?
No.
No, I don't think you would. But I have, yeah, done it. Really, I'm not talking about anything which I have not experienced. I never give you an advice what I haven't done. I've done a lot. With real effort. That is part of our pratabha. We can't get it around. Don't get up. We just have this baby attitude. Someday, some minute will come and will do it for me. Or we have the attitude of the blaming the others. And then we are just kind of real vague. Who will go on ever to sort that out? I don't know. You see? Life is an experiment, it's an adventure. And you have no birthright to be happy. No birthright. That is our task. To really do it. To permit for it in this process. It's there. You just cultivate the grounds. You see, and that's different. And then that doesn't mean that loose button will function right away good. There's still a lot of trouble there, and still a lot of problems to solve. But, you know, somehow the process is somehow here and there. One is stronger, knows a little more. The other one catches up. And realizes, well, I better don't wait till everybody does it. I better do it right now alone. Have done my generosity. Have done a selfless action. Don't need to wait. And you begin to kind of give more. That's the idea also. When you awake, don't you think you can sleep on the couch? Not need to do any. You are much more busy than ever before. Because your energies see much more where things are to be done. And then you will do it. And you're very, very filled out with work. You don't need boredom. Boredom is just a refusal of doing things, right? And if it is there, just watch it. Still do what has to be done. Just too bad, I'm bored. It's too bad, kid. You're bored. Well, bad luck. Let's do what is to be done. Just don't get pulled down by these attitudes. They're mental stuff. Have you seen all that in there somewhere? Get order in it. The only order you can get or provide a little order is when you let your attention and your consciousness go into it. And you see, that is a little on the level, it's just a little bit awareness when you practice more and more, comes from attention, from concentration, from your effort, from your open heart, your understanding. Then it is not really just concentration, it isn't just attention, it is kind of a mind which is really a little corner of an enlightened mind. It is seen, it's above, it's not attached, it lets it happen, has trust to let it happen. Even the jealousy, the more trust you have, the more you will be able to handle it rightly. You don't need to follow your impulses of reaction. And then also that does you realize that what we call it will work out is mostly connected the way I will want it. You also become then aware of that you have to sometimes just let it be in its pain, And you have to lose. You are losing, and you realize that we are also a loser of things, of emotions, of wants, of all that. Finally, you lose everything. So that also is in it, but with the right attitude. And that is then called to have a consciousness with knowledge, wisdom consciousness, or connected to a consciousness connected to wisdom. Then that is a difference of the one who is jealous, has a jealous consciousness, disconnected from wisdom energy. And a Vipassana student has a consciousness of jealousy, connected to energy of wisdom, of knowledge. See? The one who has knows of this process is having a sad consciousness with knowledge, connected. The other one has one without that. Both are sad, and you wouldn't know if both are sitting there and are sad. Yeah, sad, sure, come in, and both are sad. And you could not right away find out who is whether the difference of that consciousness, only when they begin to kind of tell you. From the amount of complaints and from the amount of self-pity and from the amount of you are the only one, you will immediately hear, know who is the one without understanding and who is sad with. And then there can be something will be little bit with and little bit without. And then comes someone in who has kind of clear seeing, and then we contact, and then we can talk, and then we can eliminate a little bit more those ignorances in that type of sad consciousness, and can make the sad consciousness just really only sad, just sad, with no connection to anything. It's just sad. You see it in its context, you see it very objectively, and then the moment you really see it more and more, you just try. You will have to make real effort to be sad, because its nature is moving on. The stream goes to the ocean. Well, long night. Did that make sense, Björn?
Yes, very much.
Well, I hope that and that what all what we talked has helped a little, widening awareness, opening the channel to consciousness with wisdom. Yes, Kyukata.
To be jealous is also the wish to possess. And as more wisdom you get, as less do you wish to possess.
Yeah.
Because all possession gives problems.
Mm.
And you wish to be free from problems. And one thing which is very important, that is by experience on the way to wisdom, will you become more and more optimistic. And by that you will also spare a lot of energy, and you will, in a way, produce more energy because you spare more energy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't misuse it. And the trouble, the most important trouble is for most people that they want to enjoy life, and life is not only for enjoyment. But you, personally, should speak about or tell us about your problem when you broke your leg, and how you, by optimism and by exercise and so on, really have
I have already, didn't I? Didn't I tell you? We have.
Oh, I spoke. I was outside.
You were, no, you were not here yet. I think I described...
Yes, I telephoned you.
Not now. No, no, okay. Another time. When you were not here yet.
Before, yes.
Before you arrived. Yeah. I think I did explain about when we talked about pain. Yeah, that is clear. Yeah. Well, yeah, about enjoyment of life. Yes. It isn't for enjoyment, but actually it is a natural thing to become happy, let's call it happy, and which means more cool, balance of mind, harmony, and so on. And I think for that is life. Yes, Gerd.
I want to ask you a question about the relationships between children and parents and adults.
So you want to ask me about the relationship?
Yes, how the so attitude towards children,
the correct one.
Yes.
Have you any?
Yes, I have a child.
You have? Well, what is the correct way of the child, of your relationship to the child? You know.
In a way, I know.
Yes. He knows, you know, you just watch it. You know. Again, the answer is balance. The child needs a lot of guidance. That's one mistake we make. In our modern age, people don't give enough guidance. They want to have the child, all things has to be free. And if you feed constantly what the children want, then you're feeding something which can never be fed and satisfied. You begin to, you have the consciousness that understands. You know that when you constantly satisfy the desires, they become endless. And you have a child which will only want and want and want. Well, who wants that child? You see? So you are in balance. You satisfy desires, and you also don't satisfy desires, and then you have to encounter the pain in the child, which will cry and will try to crave and to get it from you. And you have to be aware how you are dealing with that. It is for the good of the child. It's also, and you have to have the courage to be now the bad person in the eyes of the child. But in such a way, when you have your consciousness connected to understanding, you will find a way of refusing these desires that it maybe understands. You see? I was governess for a while in America to two children. One 2.5 and one 3.5. And I had them till 5. So I was very much traveling with them and with the parents, and we lived in very wonderful situations. And I had to take them out in the Central Park in New York. And we could, quite a lot I could do with them. I had quite a lot of freedom. But it always was, I was lucky because the parents were trusting me also when I said no. So the little one, maybe he was 3 by then, oh, he was just a bunch of desire. Everything he saw, he wanted. especially in turns on toys. When we walked by toy shops, he wanted to look in New York. And even sometimes there was some kind of a horse or a camel or something displayed in the window, connect, you know, in like a travel off agency or something like that. But for him it was a toy, and he wanted that camel. And he would take, I wouldn't see it even going by, and he saw it. He said, "Ooh, I want that camel." "Yeah," I said, "darling, you want it." And, "Well, let's look at it." "No, I want it." And he would go and would fortify, as just an example how he would do it. "And I want, and I want." Well, in the beginning, so I would will watch it. Till he was stepping with his feet, "I want it," and throwing himself on the floor, "and I want it." And he didn't want to come with me. He wanted the camel. So what you do with that? Well, the best is it helps. That's what I did. He screamed and I shocked him a little. You see, by that, not hurting, but now you stop. He stops then, and then I would talk to him, would carry him, would comfort him, and we'll distract him, and then we'll talk to him, and we'll go to the camel again back, and we'll say, "Look, it belongs to somebody else. We cannot have it, and it's just for looking sometimes." "Yeah, for looking." "Mm-hmm." "Yeah," I said, "it's for looking." And then also, when it is for looking, one cannot have it. And the camel wants to sleep there, and all kinds of things, you will say. So, "it's for looking." "Yeah, for looking." And so we will talk, and I show him other things. They are for looking in the window. They are not for having. And other things, they are for looking. "Yes, for looking." "Yes. See, here is a little horseshoe. They are for looking there." After a while, he will tell me it was for looking. It was not for having. And I had a wonderful boy. He did not desire it anymore. He knew it is for looking in the window. And then sometimes one can buy them. But it depends on the mama and how much money you have, or whether you have enough or you don't have enough or something. Sim, you can't talk to children like that. You must, but you must have a firm hand to cut through sometimes. Above all, you should give them love, and you should give him your care. You should see and distinguish what they need and what they don't need. What is above, what is becoming a desire, and you must see that it, when you can, without attention and without understanding, you are feeding and making strong a real desiring, wanting, spoiled brat. Besides that, you should know they are not your property. They're given to you, and you take care of them. At a certain time, like a bird in the nest, they will fly. That doesn't mean that you don't see them anymore. There's that relatedness, a very specific relationship you have with a child and the child with you, which you can never just throw overboard. It can turn then into appreciation and into a friendship and into a gratefulness and in all kinds of things.
But every influence of the parents is diminished when they come to school.
Because not alone. No.
There's a status symbol. And the Norwegian said to me once, "Fanskapet begynner når barnen, når naboens barn får sine første slalomski." That is, the hell starts when the children of the neighbor get their first slalomski.
Yeah, now listen, let's finish it up. These are all problems, and this is life. There is no rule for anything, how to do it right. And there will be millions of opinions and suggestions always coming when you ask for them. And it is good. But if you don't practice inside yourself, your awakeness brings an awakening process, you will always have to rely on others, and you will never know how to really relate. In the light of your awakening, of your alertness, in the light of your observation, where your own process, your own mental domain can come to some order. There are so many faculties, so many... When that is in order and has harmony, I guarantee you, and the Buddha has done that too, and everyone else will do it too, then you will know how to relate to that being, which is your child. No matter how difficult the problem is. You will be able to see the facts as they are, and you will be able to respond to these facts. And these can be different ways. The only thing we have to provide is the right order in yourself. Then everything will issue right. Not only Socrates said that, as I remember right now that he said that. From the inner order, all things come right. So, then you find one way which will not be hurting, which will be objective, which will be somehow a communication from heart to heart, perhaps even to a point where it looks maybe not soft and gentle, but it will. Because sometimes... even in a so-called firmness, they can lay a great deal of compassion and understanding. The mind knows where it's at, how life really basically moves, and what are the faculties which are closing the mind in, which are leading to more ignorance and confusion, which are the faculties which are leading to more opening, and love and harmony and good well-being, then you will out of that know how to relate to that child, how to relate to your dog, how to relate to your wife or lover or roommate. Actually, you know then how to relate to all, no matter what different situation, with different dispositions they have, you see everyone very clearly, with an empty mind, without the burdens of clouding their communication. But you see, we're always failing in that, because we're always allowing so much stuff in us. When you remember this afternoon, we were practicing a little bit. At one point I said, see how it feels when we rub or push back and come forth. I hardly had spoken it out. You all were lost in response, in laughing, in kind of reactions to it. You had totally that moment lost, not totally, but some, of the objectivity. You got lost in your feelings, felt funny, some other thoughts came, gee, rubbing my neck and rubbing my back, and we both together, I wonder what he thinks, and so you come with other thoughts in, then it isn't anymore the pure action. And then it's different, then you lost. Then other things come in. So what it is, this practice provides for you the alertness not to allow those unwholesome, suffering-creating qualities to overwhelm and to rule you.
What about meditation?
Now what about meditation? I was just talking about it. Gerd, now don't play dumb. You really know, about meditation. I just talked about meditation. The process of observing, of providing for my being, that alertness of mind, which always knows what experience is coming in, what kind of thoughts, what kind of consciousness, whether I'm sensing or doing this or am sad, whatever. You are always in alertness of that experience, so that you don't get overwhelmed and grabbed by any of them. But sadness goes by. You see, I'm talking about the process of meditation.
Yes, but I'm talking about the child.
About what? The child. Yeah. Oh, do you mean, well then you must ask the question, right? You say, what about meditation?
No, he said it, so
no,
so you didn't hear.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, then I take back what I said. Don't play dumb. By that I mean, you see, it's not dumb that you not know any. It's the wrong term, but I do use it sometimes. I mean, actually, don't play. You don't understand. You really do what the practice is in relationship to practice. In relationship to a child, it depends, Gerd, how old the child is, how you can begin. But actually you can begin in very early age, 3 years old, 4 years old. You can make it realize. It should have a rest. It's quiet time now. I don't want to sleep in the afternoon. Yes, you do. You cannot sleep. You just lie down there quietly. You can't do it quietly, give him some books or so. I have been governors, I'm talking, that's the way I did it. They had to be in their room from 2 to 3. And they couldn't. Which are subjects where the mind has pleasure and quiet and focus. You observe keenly that it doesn't watch television or the stuff which is shown on television. It doesn't. If you have television, you have to cover it, and it can have only a certain program. Number one in the relationship, that is all meditation. You can't sit the child on lotus, although some do. You sit and the child is with you. It knows now you are sitting in meditation. Well, maybe she will say, Papa, I like to sit too. Maybe she wants to sit on your lap then. Now, well, you say no, you have your own pillow, you sit next to it. When you don't want to sit, you go out. My dog does that. So, you see, you must know the principle of it, and you speak to it. Yeah, he really does. He comes, and when I go in my shrine,
it's normal for dogs.
Normal what?
It's normal for dogs to kind of go down and lie down on the field, and then when they don't want to lie there, then they go.
No, he does stay all the time I'm there. The minute I sit down, he sits there. A very strange one. And he sits on two legs. Sits next to me. It's a dachshund. A wheelchair. Well, you know him, don't you?
Only this dog, only pizza, but he didn't sit.
Which one?
Only pizza. Oh, you had one dog on pizza.
I didn't have one. He came, he found me. He warmed my feet.
Me, yes.
It was so cold there. I was happy he came. He slept on my feet.
Own dog I have seen in your company.
Oh, I'm talking about one in America. Who is a dachshund. It's my dog. So you see, There are many ways. There is, all, by the way, a very nice book out, Children and Meditation, and Buddhist Meditation. I haven't looked into it, but it is existing, which probably would give you some lead. But the principle is that you know the principle, is the calming the mind, and that means Jesus, don't let this child sit and tell it has to be in lotus and so on. You provide for the child the atmosphere that it doesn't get excited all the time and gets upset or gets into too many subjects. It's a careful careful guiding. It's not so easy. But you can do it. Show him the nice things. Let him listen to the birds. Let him appreciate the flowers. Tell him nice things about the flowers, about the give him appreciation of animals, of life, of so that it can relate. Tell him that it has the same, it feels like you do. You feel hard, you touch it, will not touch and grab anymore. You begin to kind of open the mind in such a way that these qualities, which we call the beautiful, noble qualities of a human being, are getting supported and cultivated. If you have a child, aren't you doing it in that way?
Yes, Monica is an expert on this.
Yeah, so good. Well, that's a good answer. That's the way, you don't need Buddhism for that. Many children got up, but it's nice, since we have this training, you have a good guidance, you have a better understanding of the mind. You feed that little doo-doo there in the breakfast, you see him, there's a porridge plate and stuffing it away, one after the other. You can see how this process is just, you know, the impulse for want, for satisfying, gratifying. It's nice to see that gives you actually more love for the child. I don't say that in a diminishing way. No, it also gives you, however, at the same time, a little bit of, you know, objective understanding. It's a living process now in the go. He has to develop a lot of these qualities first. But when you see they're already very strong, then you kind of tape at it a little. You can observe a lot in a child. You can learn a lot. And out of that you can find also your guidance. Where's the long... Now what's the next topic? Let's stop. That's enough. So, back to that. Just keep on to the qualities which you understand are the good qualities, leading to openness of heart and mind. And somehow you can work with that in a young child already. And it is not your property, remember. It is given to you to take care of and to help it growing, and let it grow, and see to it that in that young growing you can already cultivate a little bit of the mental faculties, watching it that the raw impulses don't get overboard, you see. That's a hard job, to find the balance with it. Most parents know, have done one or the other, all free or all depressive, all oppressing, and holding too tight everything. And right now there is a tendency of having the children just too free. It's a real problem. You see, child grows up, it doesn't know, it doesn't have even the right understanding on the samsaric level. So it is just thrown into this world and free object for the impulses. And if you leave them, let it grow up in so-called freedom, that poor thing, I feel sorry. Not sorry, I have real compassion. It's real painful for me sometimes to see that, the ignorance. And then you have, with 12-year-old ones, they have already lots of problems. They are already in the drugs and in heroin and in drinking, in knifing, in stealing. It's really true. There's big problems in the schools nowadays. And why these things come also as too free, much freedom. The child is thrown into to be absorbed and used up by these impulses. There's no understanding, there's no wisdom, and it's just because it's all, you know, also a result of the modern society. Parents are not at home. Working. It's all changing. I think in a few years we probably will have no family life anymore because of the too much involvement of the parents, and so that we will have probably big institutions where children maybe get grown up in communities and guided rightly. Maybe that would be better. I don't know the solution. I have no solution to nothing. I have only that mind which sees what is. And where I can and have direct connection, I will respond and probably can change or can give advice or so, or can maybe share something. But otherwise, yeah, can't do. Big problem. Can't change. Everything. Unless you have direct connection. Now you can't have that direct connection to your child. So you have to probably make a great deal of effort to counteract all the bad influences from outside too. That you cannot eliminate. And it doesn't help by we condemning them and putting the fault on them. You and your situation have to make all effort possible to kind of do the best you can. Life is not giving you an easy task here. I think we have exhausted ourselves.
Can I say something? Concerning children, because I work with them, one good way can always be to tell stories, you know, to tell good stories, fairy tales and these things, because they can really contain the Dharma.
Mm-hmm.
In a very nice, nice picture.
Not just
so
as a story. You may be also
a tale or something.
Yeah, it becomes also automatic with children. You know, they hear it and it becomes automatic. They know it by heart. Then this is good. I think the story is very good. And if you also at the same time make them kind of understand a little bit the figures, the good ones, and as qualities, you see, so that they begin also to have a perspective to the content of the story, and they probably do that.
They immediately usually identify with the good.
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah,
in the story, so that is good.
Yeah, but you see, not all do. Also, The ones on television, they identify also.
That's something else. Mm-hmm. I mean,
no, but in the stories, yes. The real Dharma stories, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you have to select also then from your right understanding what stories is good, you know. Because there's a lot of modern, stupid stories, you know. But old ones are usually better.
Yeah, the old ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see, we are not, don't get the idea that when you come to Vipassana course, that is a thing happening to solve your problems. It's not. That's not the reason or the criteria of the Vipassana meditation course. It works on a higher level. It is not in a confrontation with that. It cultivates a mind which can see it. How these things arise, and that they arise and that they pass away. And that quality which can kind of see has is devoid of criticizing or hating or greed or possessing all these, and so it has a very pure force of the mind, is pure. And in that, as I already said, you provide for the whole process you are, for the mental faculties and also for the body, a certain order. And when this thing is in order, this machine, it can produce the right responses, the right thoughts, the right feelings, and that brings you very naturally to the right action, to the right response, to the right communication. And then whatever the problem is, you deal with that. It is not a solving of the problem in the Vipassana course. That is in it as an extra gift. It will happen if you have patience, if you have devotion, if you have a willingness to make the efforts again and again, and if you have parami, or the pure force of the mind, which is trust, and effort, as I said, for practicing. That is what we are doing, and not this. And when we do something like that, that is was a sheer gift and a kind of family meeting. Usually I don't go that far, but I think sometimes it's probably good to touch these areas, these problems, and to bring some sarik happening and confront us with that, so that we can see how the Dharma can be applied and how it relates. You see, the Dharma, what is the Dharma? It's a teaching on one level. On another, it's everything what you are to the Dharma. It belongs to our thoughts, our visions, our skandhas, and our physical energy, all our sense bases through which we experience. That's the Dharma. So it says, remember my vow in the Mahayana training, in the Zen training in Japan, there's a vow, and you say, Bodhisattvas say, sentient beings are numberless, vow to save them. Desires are innumerable, are unexhaustible. I vow to master them. The dharmas are unexhaustible. I vow to master them. All the dharmas. So, and then you are, and you understand that, and you do that, you don't need to worry about boredom. You have always work. Nice work of giving. The receiving is only two, because what you give comes back, reflects back, and that is your gift there, and you receive it. So I think that is enough. Okay? It's 11. It was our late night, but I like you to get up and stand up and just stand. Don't you skip now. We are going to sit. And I think we maybe walk. Maybe that would be good. A quiet walk. And maybe it does also just sit and stand. Just stretch yourself. And once again, come down, and perhaps you hang over some, let the sensations come through, and the mind receive it, turn backwards, and rotate. A few times all around yourself. So from the inner need you are turning. You don't just throw yourself around. But see where you really need it. Respond to the feelings, and then the feelings tell you how you turn. And then the next is you know that you are really allowing it. And you become more and more the witness of the show. Then it will be all right, the movement. It will not become something out of line or some display. And then gradually come to quiet. And we may just lower ourselves a little by going down, and just bring a little back, get rid of it, and come out and stand down. See whether you would like to do it again, there's a need, and then you do it again, or you may just to turn it in a different way. Just find your own kind of necessary response. I think we should sit for 10 minutes. Do you agree? Let's all sit and let it calm down. Come closer. Come all very close here. Let's all sit very close together. Okay. Make this a sitting. I think this is very good. Too much now. Learn out of. Maybe one in that corner. Hmm? Is that good? Is that enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it then.
Should we open the window?
Yeah, I would think so. It's a good idea. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any space there to sit. So, now let us dedicate the last few minutes for this cultivation, for the cultivation of the mind, which is able to just observe and allow it all what arises to pass away. Feeling, thoughts, consciousness, emotions of all sorts. Mm-hmm.